Welcome to the bonus round. This is a chance for us to bring you some additional Vegas content not a part of the usual show. 360 Legal Lounge is our opportunity to take an in-depth look at gambling law, its history, and its evolution. So without further ado, my lawyer has something to say. It's hard to imagine that anyone who listens to this show hasn't seen National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation. But for those that haven't, spoiler alert. At the end of the movie, despite losing the family's last $2 on Keno, they win back all the money Clark lost on vacation when the man next to them gives them his winning ticket as he dies. But can you legally claim the dead man's winnings? Will the casino award you a ticket you didn't buy? Does the fact he gave it to you matter? What if you didn't simply find it on the ground? Does that matter? That's the legal issue we'll discuss today on 360 Legal Lounge.
But first, your spoonful of legalese. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not create an attorney-client relationship with any listener. In other words, although I'm a lawyer, I'm not your lawyer. If you need personalized gaming law advice, contact an attorney in your community. On June 9th, 1990, Philip Hazelwood, a retired California Highway Patrol officer from Alameda County, California, was in Reno, Nevada at the Harris Club as a participant in a Keno tournament. While waiting for dinner, Mr. Hazelwood noticed that a Keno game being played was delayed, and from his experience, he knew that someone had won the game. Indeed, he was able to confirm this with a Keno supervisor who informed him that a $20,000 winning Keno ticket had not been presented for payment. Mr. Hazelwood asked for and received a print-off of the winning numbers and got permission from the Harris Keno supervisor to search for the discarded ticket in the trash cans of the surrounding area. As you can guess, Mr. Hazelwood got back to his hotel room, sifts through the discarded Keno slips to find the winning ticket. When he presents the winning ticket for redemption, the Keno supervisor proceeds to follow the Harris procedure and processes the payment by calling surveillance. After surveillance refuses to sign off on the ticket due to the unusual manner in which Mr. Hazelwood came to obtain said ticket, there was considerable discussion amongst the Harris employees, and it was decided to call in the Gaming Control Board. This is primarily in light of Nevada Revised Statute 463.362, which reads,
whenever a licensee refuses payment of alleged winnings to a patron, and if the licensee and the patron are unable to resolve the dispute to the satisfaction of the patron, and the dispute involves at least $500, the licensee shall immediately notify the board.
While waiting for the Gaming Control Board's arrival, Mr. Hazelwood was asked by the Harris employees to accompany them to the Keno manager's office, a request with which he complied. On the way to the manager's office, one of the employees told Hazelwood that it is a crime for someone to cash in a ticket for which he had not purchased. Specifically, the employee was referencing Nevada Revised Statute 465.070, which reads in part,
it is unlawful for any person to claim, collect, or take, or attempt to claim, collect, or take, money or anything of value in or from a gambling game with intent to defraud without having made a wager contingent thereon.
Having the subsequent conversation between Mr. Hazelwood and the Gaming Control Board, no Harris employees were included, but the Gaming Control Board did read Mr. Hazelwood his Miranda rights and informed him that in Nevada, it is unlawful to claim, collect, or attempt to collect a wager with the intent to commit fraud. At that time, Hazelwood did what every lawyer wishes their client would do, and that was to shut up and ask for an attorney. Mr. Hazelwood asked if he was free to leave, where one Gaming Control Board agent testified that he was free to leave, another agent testified he was free to leave once he was read his constitutional rights. Based upon the facts of the case, the control board agents decided to refer the criminal matter to the district attorney's office for prosecution, even without the participation of the Harrah's employees. During trial, a gaming control board agent testified he was not informed of the Keno supervisor's comments to Mr. Hazelwood about the lost ticket. However, a different agent testified that had he been informed of the Keno supervisor's actions, he still would have submitted a report to the district attorney. A mere 6 days later, Mr. Hazelwood received a letter from the Gaming Control Board informing him that his complaint against Harrah's had been investigated and was denied. However, Hazelwood had never filed a complaint and therefore requested his attorney respond to the Gaming Control Board letter. After that, Mr. Hazelwood filed a civil lawsuit against Harrah's alleging false imprisonment, defamation, negligent, and negligent misrepresentation. Harrah's responded back with 14 affirmative defenses, including statutory immunity from civil liability. To make matters worse for Mr. Hazelwood, on December 7, 1990, two police officers visited his home in California to inform them that they had a felony warrant for his arrest based out of Nevada. He turned himself in and was booked in Reno, but those charges were eventually dropped a year later. Regarding Mr. Hazelwood's civil trial against Harrah's, the jury found in favor by awarding him $425,000 plus costs and pre-judgment interest. But in response, and here's where I beg you listeners not to fast forward, Harrah's asked the trial judge to find in their favor, notwithstanding the jury verdict, or in the alternative, grant them a new trial based on the grounds that Mr. Hazelwood failed to prove essential elements of his case of defamation, false imprisonment, negligent, and negligent misrepresentation, and because they being Harrah's, had proven the essential elements of its affirmative offenses, including statutory immunity from civil liability. The trial court, listening to both Harrah's arguments and Mr. Hazelwood's arguments that the jury's decision was the jury's decision, it ultimately ruled that the defamation claim against Harrah's should be dismissed because no publication, a critical element to the civil charge, ever had occurred. So, point Harrah's. Next, the jury agreed with Harrah's that a new trial on the amount of damages Mr. Hazelwood would receive was necessary because a judge believed that $425,000 was based on passion and prejudice. But we'll get into that later. But second point, Harrah's. Finally, the judge also struck the award of pre-judgment interest on the grounds that the verdict failed to distinguish between past and future damages, thus third point in favor of Harrah's. Therefore, when everything was said and done, Mr. Hazelwood's victory in the courtroom was reduced to a finding that Harrah's was not protected by a civil liability statute, could receive some amount of damages from his time being falsely detained in the manager's office, the negligent misrepresentation of the Keno supervisor, and the negligent lack of investigation by the casino. The judge did give Mr. Hazelwood an option of accepting a remittiture in the amount of $200,000 for resolving the matter and going away, if interested, and that plays a factor which we will soon discuss.
All right, so legal holding number one. The trial court and Nevada Supreme Court agree to reduction of award and new trial for damages.
The Nevada Supreme Court has held that actions for damages in which the Nevada legislature has not provided a rule of measurement, that is, in the jury's responsibility, of course, to determine that amount that'll be allowed. But further, they point out that a court is not justified in granting a new trial on grounds of excessive damages unless the verdict is, and I'm quoting here, so flagrantly improper as to indicate passion, prejudice, or corruption in the jury, unquote. The court may not invade the deliberated decision of a jury by arbitrarily substituting what the court feels is a more suitable sum. The mere fact that a verdict is large is not in and of itself indicative of passion and prejudice. So what the heck happened here in this case where the trial court judge, and then supported by the Nevada Supreme Court, would invade a jury's deliberative decision to award Mr. Hazelwood his $425,000? The trial judge allowed for a remittiture, which is essentially a judge's order reducing a judgment awarded by a jury when the award exceeds the amount asked for by the person who brought the lawsuit. And so the only job of the Nevada Supreme Court then is determine if doing so by that lower court was abuse of that lower court's discretion. When viewing the decision, the court's order to remit becomes suspicious unless the amount awarded by the jury is so excessive as to suggest that there was passion and prejudice. Here, the Supreme Court believed that although Mr. Hazelwood provided solid reasons to support a substantial verdict, the jury's verdict was in part rendered under the influence of passion and prejudice. They even noted that Mr. Hazelwood provided no evidence of physical injury, a key factor when determining how much money is necessary to compensate him for past, present, and future medical expenses, or embarrassment, or inconvenience, or anything of the like. To the contrary, the court determined that Mr. Hazelwood likely garnered undue sympathy from the jury because he was a retired California Highway Patrol officer. The proverbial David facing off against a large, faceless, Goliath-type corporation. Mr. Hazelwood's attorney argued that he may not have suffered physical injury, loss of wages, or diminished earning capacity, but that doesn't mean the verdict was excessive. The attorney contends that the humiliation, the disgrace, the emotional distress, and the worry caused by his periods of confinement and his arrest were of such a magnitude that the jury's verdict was proper. Further, the attorney maintained that there was no point in the trial during which the jury may have had an opportunity to be incited by passion and prejudice. Alas, neither the trial judge nor the Nevada Supreme Court agreed with Mr. Hazelwood. They believed it was clear there was a conflict as to how much and what type of damages Mr. Hazelwood actually suffered. As such, it would be appropriate to hold a separate trial simply to determine how much Mr. Hazelwood should legitimately receive from Harrah's.
Legal holding two, the Supreme Court sides with Hazelwood, grants him prejudgment interest.
The only thing I'm going to say about this prejudgment interest is the interest a person is entitled to collect by law before going to court and obtaining a judgment against the debtor. So essentially in our instance, Mr. Hazelwood was able to receive a certain amount of money, i.e. interest, based on whatever his final damages are determined to be at the new trial. I'm sure Mr. Hazelwood would much rather have the $425,000 and no interest, but that's personal commentary.
And finally, legal issue three, the district court was correct when not dismissing the claims of false imprisonment, negligence, and negligent misrepresentation as found by the jury.
Okay, here's the one upside Mr. Hazelwood can hold on to, despite the rug being pulled out from underneath him on his $425,000 jury award. When ruling on a motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict, the trial court must view the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. In this instance, Mr. Hazelwood was the non-moving party. It was Harrah's that had asked for a different outcome. The court may grant that motion only if the evidence was such that a reasonable person would have necessarily reached a different conclusion. The trial court believed, and the Supreme Court agreed, it was indeterminate whether the evidence was such that a reasonable person would have necessarily reached a different verdict by finding in favor of Harrah's. Frankly, the district court believed there was substantial evidence supporting the jury's finding that a person of reasonable caution would not believe that Mr. Hazelwood had violated the statute prohibiting the collecting of a wager not placed by the bettor. They held that a reasonable person would have to determine whether Mr. Hazelwood's acts were done with the intent to defraud. But Harrah's, trying with one last gasp to win 100% of their appeal, argued that they were immune from the civil liability of false imprisonment because of Nevada Revised Statute 465.101, subsection 1, which provides...
Any licensee or his officers may question any person in his establishment suspected of violating any of the gaming statutes without incurring civil liability. In addition, a licensee may detain a suspect, provided the detention is for a reasonable time and the licensee has probable cause to believe a violation has occurred without incurring civil liability of false imprisonment.
The Nevada Supreme Court concurred with the district court's determination that Harrah's employees failed to obtain more information concerning Mr. Hazelwood's possible violation of the aforementioned statutes. That it was this failure to act which caused the detention to be unreasonable and without probable cause. Therefore, Harrah's was not immune from the civil liability because further investigation could have prevented Mr. Hazelwood's detention. Lastly, the Supreme Court agreed that the statements made by the casino supervisor created a false impression in the mind of Mr. Hazelwood that there was nothing improper about looking for the discarded ticket, and if he found it, that it would be paid. The court thought it was clear the jury could reasonably have believed that the misrepresentation by the casino supervisor proximately caused Mr. Hazelwood's injuries. In conclusion, when a new trial is held for the amount of damages Mr. Hazelwood suffered, the jury will have the right to take into consideration his false imprisonment, the casino's negligence in handling the situation, and the keno supervisor's negligent misrepresentation of what would happen if the winning keno ticket could be found.
So what do you think? Based on Nevada Revised Statute 465.070, subsection 3, would the winning keno ticket your freshly deceased friend gave you be eligible for redemption? In our case, the ticket was found. Would it matter if it were gifted to you?
Thank you for listening to 360 Legal Lounge. If you have any topic ideas, legal gaming questions that you'd like answered, or just want to give us feedback, please look us up on Twitter. We're at 360 Legal Lounge, or drop us an email to 360legallounge@gmail.com. Or check out the Vice Lounge Online website at viceloungeonline.com. I'm Tony Snyder, and we'll talk to you next time.